Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night!
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 170th episode of Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk radio, and music brought to you every week on AM 1240 WGBB on Sunday nights at 11, with vintage episodes rebroadcast on Live365.com, their DFSX radio channel, Thursday nights at 8 and 11. Now, if you didn't get all that, just go to my website, davesgoneby.org, and there's all sorts of links and information, pictures, and downloadable conspiracy theories right at your fingertips. But the only conspiracy here tonight is a bunch of people conspiring to give you a fun evening of radio entertainment. Among them, our frequent contributor, Rabbi Sol Solomon. He's the head of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. He's a very angry but adorable spiritual leader. Now, he's explained holidays on this show. He's lectured on quasi-religious and cockeyed religious matters. And he's done some interviews. A few weeks back, he had that fabulous chat with singer-songwriter Jill Sobule. He talked with Mike Burstyn and songwriter Dottie Berman. And he had that one disastrous run-in with Mandy Patinkin, but who doesn't have a disastrous run-in with Mandy Patinkin? Otherwise, we're always thrilled to have Rabbi Sol Solomon with us on Dave's Gone By. And tonight, he's interviewing not one, but two guests. Kind of a menage a trois, I guess. There's a show playing downtown on the Lower East Side called Knowing Bliss. It's a new play by a woman named Arden Cass, and the play sounds kind of interesting. It's about this mother and daughter taking an anthropological journey together, an expedition. The mother is white, the daughter is black, and they come across a shape-shifting coyote and the remnants of an Indian tribe. All right, sounds terrible, but I think it's pretty good. And it did win a contest held by Multi Stages, the production company, so Knowing Bliss won their 2005 New Works contest. And now, the show is being produced by Multi Stages and directed there by its founder, Lorca Paris. She's been running the theater company for several years now, and she'll be talking to the rabbi about the show, about theater in general, about Jewishness, because, you know, you can't talk to the rabbi and not talk about Jewishness. It just sort of goes with the territory. And the lead actress in Knowing Bliss is Blanche Baker. Now, that name might ring a bell for a couple of reasons. First of all, because her mom is Carol Baker, the sexy blonde actress from Baby Doll and Something Wild and The Big Country. Actually, something of a legend. She hasn't acted at all in a couple of years, although she was working well into the late 1990s. And although Carol Baker had a rather bitter divorce many years ago, she was married during her early acting years to Jack Garfine, a director at the Actors Studio and former artistic director of the Harold Clurman Theater. He's Blanche's dad. He's living in Paris now. So technically, Blanche Baker is Blanche Garfine, especially since Carol Baker converted to Judaism back when she married Jack. I'm not sure if she stayed in the tribe after the split, but certainly, with an Oscar-nominated bombshell mom and a theater director dad, Blanche Baker was bound to be an actress, pretty much inevitable. And she had her shot. She was in 16 Candles, which is still her most recognizable role. She was in a couple of teen films in the 1980s, like French Postcards, which I always rather liked. And she had a role in The Seduction of Joe Tynan. No, that's not a biographical statement. That was an old Alan Alda movie. And Blanche Baker had a major part in the landmark miniseries Holocaust, which earned her an Emmy Award in 1978. And she did all sorts of roles in film, TV, theater, throughout the 1970s and 80s. But then, something changed. Specifically, her uterus, which pumped out 4 babies in relatively quick succession. So she decided to take time off from acting and do the mommy thing, which took her well over a decade. Of course, in Hollywood terms, that's about 100 years. It's worse than dog years over there, even when the actresses don't turn into dogs. So you go away from the biz for a couple of years when you're young, you come back, and they didn't even know you were gone. So certainly, that can be demoralizing or, at the very least, disorienting. Once you've had a taste of wedding cake, now all they're feeding you is Twinkies. But hey, Twinkies are sweet too, and a lot easier to manage. So Blanche Baker stepped out of the limelight and started working with limestone. Well, metaphorically, she became a sculptress, however you call it, all the while having a family and raising 4 kids. But Blanche is back, making movies, doing theater, and she's in this play, Knowing Bliss, directed by Lorca Perez, and both Blanche and Lorca will be the rabbi's guests tonight on Dave's Gone By, brought to you by Hewlett Minuteman Press, those blissful kings of copies on the south shore of Long Island. The show is also sponsored by Total Theater, publishers of Performing Arts Insider Theater magazine. If ever there was a time to pick up a copy or subscribe, right now, the heart of the theater season, this is when you really need it most. Go to performingartsinsider.com for more information. And as long as you're surfing the web, check out mortgagesrock.com. It is not your typical mortgage site because these folks aren't just pitching to get home sellers and refinancers. They want to teach you how to be a mortgage broker. If you know people who need a loan for rebuilding, for buying a second home, for college, they become your client, and MortgagesRock.com helps you do the paperwork. So, not only do you get your friends and coworkers a mitzvah, in the parlance of the rabbi, but you get commission. It's win-win-win all around at MortgagesRock.com. Fully licensed and reachable in person and by telephone. You know, they're not just some web page with nothing behind it. They're the real thing. But the place to start is their website, MortgagesRock.com, because making money never sounded so good. Oh, and speaking of sounds, I also want to sound off just a little about my recent experience in jury duty. That's right, you know, although that I have proved every week I've been on the air for these 3 odd years, very odd years, that I'm basically a borderline lunatic, and I have no business passing legal judgment over anyone, and that if they still made rubber rooms and padded cells, if they threw me in one with a microphone, a handful of playbills, and a bag of peanuts, I could be happy for years. Although anyone who has listened to this show for any period of time could walk up to someone in authority and say, all right, this guy Dave, he should not be allowed near people. Even if you put him in that hockey outfit like Hannibal Lecter, you're really taking a chance. Despite all this obvious evidence that the glint in my eyes should set off metal detectors, Nassau County called me for jury duty last week. In fact, they called me twice. Not quite. Nassau County called me once, and then a week later, I get a card in the mail from Suffolk County summoning me for federal jury service only 2 weeks later. That, of course, was a mistake. Our tax dollars at work for you. Now, I don't live in Suffolk, and if I am schlepping to Mineola to do my jury duty in the middle of April, it's a little unfair asking me to haul my ass up to Islip 2 weeks later. And, okay, they cleared that part up very quickly. I don't have to go for the federal for, well, 2 years anyway. But like every other citizen who isn't a caregiver, an invalid, or a Mexican scrubbing toilets and marching on Washington, I had to show up at 100 Supreme Court Drive in Mineola last Monday, and I didn't postpone. I didn't make excuses. I did not buy into that stuff about only losers who can't get out of jury duty wind up in jury duty, because we're all in the same boat, and sometimes you gotta take the oars. But I think I rowed a little against the current, so I'm going to talk about that also on tonight's show. We go for a mix of smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music on Dave's Gone By, and we will hear if Rabbi Saul Solomon can contain his composure when Blanche Baker and Lorca Perez visit the neighborhood right after this.
Hey, baby. For a good time, don't call me. Read Dave Lefkowitz's book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. It's got all these funny comedies in it, and they make you laugh, they make you think, they make you, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. 516-295-1511. Or email davesgoneby@aol.com. If you like Dave on the air, you'll love him between the covers. Ah, fine wine, great books, priceless antiques. All that's missing is something to listen to. But of course, episodes of Dave's Gone By, the music, the comedy, the perceptive talk, entire shows preserved on compact disc, any episode you choose, just $12, shipping included. No home is complete without Dave's Gone By on CD. So visit davesgoneby.org because you're worth it.
Hi, this is Blanche Baker, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
Welcome back to the Dave's Gone By radio program. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York, and I'm so proud, I'm so happy to have not one, but two terrific half-Jewish guests on the show tonight. Yes, I've got a director and an actress to talk to, and they're both involved in a nice new off-Broadway play called Knowing Bliss, and it shall be blissful, I hope, to talk to the director, Lorca Perez, and the actress, Blanche Baker, who are on the telephone with me as we speak. Lorca, Blanche, how you doing?
We're doing great, Rabbi, thank you.
Oh, it's good to hear from you. How did you two get involved in this new play?
Well, Knowing Bliss was the winner of a contest that Multistages held, my theater company, and she won over close to 100 plays.
And when I got to read the play, I thought the part I'm playing was so fantastic, I begged Lorca that I could play it.
Now, what are you playing? What part is this?
Well, I get to play a musical theater star from the Midwest who is reunited with her black daughter, and they're going on a hike through Native American territory.
Sounds like a story out of my life, I'm telling you. No, I kid. No, but okay, so what happens on this hike? What do they do? They see wild animals and things?
Well, actually, they do, yes. They see a coyote and a raccoon.
Oh, I saw one of those in Central Park.
Shape-shifting hawk. They're all played by one man, Carlos Vitante, who's a brilliant and gorgeous dancer. And we don't really know if he's live or a specter.
All right. You might want to ask him. It's a simple question. Hey, are you live or are you a specter?
Are you really there?
It's a quick thing that he can answer, probably, you know? You could save 30 pages of script just by asking him. So what was the process of working on the what did you have to figure out, Lorca, as the director of this play? What were you trying to get at? What was the heart of the piece?
Well, there's a lot. The play is called Knowing Bliss, and the daughter's name is Bliss. And she's trying to find herself. And along the journey, they actually find each other, the mother and the daughter. They get to know each other. A lot of secrets come out. And we've had a wonderful journey, actually, the playwright Arden Cass and I, working on it, because we have sort of stepped into Native American territory. And we need to do a lot of research and understand how that world works to be able to present this play.
All right, and Blanche, what about getting into the character? Was there a day or a moment when you sort of felt, I found her, this is what I'm going to do, this is me?
Well, I think part of the process is you're always looking, but my character is very funny, and I get to speak in a southern accent, and I totally do not believe that coyote is there or any other such thing, and my daughter and I could not be more different at the beginning of the play, and then as it unfolds, you understand that really this mother and daughter have a lot in common, and it's really about how their relationship evolves, and during the rehearsal process, obviously, we explored it and hopefully have discovered some fun and interesting things.
Good. And by the way, I neglected to ask, shame on me, where the hell is this thing playing?
Oh, the play is being done at Teatro Latea, which is part of a wonderful cultural arts center downtown at 107 Suffolk Street on the corner of Rivington in the Lower East Side.
Oh, I love that! The Lower East Side. That's my old stomping ground.
Stripes Matzah's right there.
That's right. Stripes Matzah's on
right
the corner.
Across the street.
Oh, this is fabulous, and this is good. And also, how can people get tickets, by the way?
You can get tickets by online. You can contact www.smarttix.com, or you can telephone 212-868-4444.
868-4444.
And you have to ask for the play, which is Knowing Bliss.
Knowing Bliss, which is running until when?
We run actually from April the 26th until May 13th.
Oh, so people have to hurry up. They got to get their tickets now if they don't want to be like a loss or shut out of this.
Right, get their tickets and their matzah.
Are you giving away free matzah intermission?
No, but on the way you can pick up a matzah.
No, that's not. No, you come on. They're paying the money. They're coming in. You should give them a little matzah.
Yeah, we're giving them the laugh, the good time. They have to buy their matzah.
Is it
the money.
Is it a comedy or a drama or something in between?
It's in between. I'd say it's a serio comedy because the issues are not comedic and there's a lot of serious moments in the play.
But I'm funny.
But
I can't help it.
Blanche is hysterical.
But you're not really particularly known for comedy, are you? I mean, you've done.
Was that serious in 16 Candles when I tripped down the aisle? I don't think so. I hope I'm not for comedy.
Fair enough, but that was one film that you did when you were a little baby girl there. You've done a bunch of other things since. let me look at the bio
I've
here.
I've done a lot of comedic roles. It's one of the things I really enjoy doing best.
Well, but here's the deal. Here's one of the things that's interesting, I guess, to people listening to the program, aside from the fact of your half-Jewishness, which we will get to, is the fact that you kind of were off what we call the radar for a while.
That's right. I just coming back from a 15-year break where I took care of children. I have four children.
Mazel tov.
Close to the city, but now two of the children are actually out of the house at college. And
they're not at Duke University, are they?
Bronx,
what?
And happy to be working again.
Well, so what? At what point did you say, you know, I've done the housewife thing, I've done the mother thing, now it's time for me to go back and do the acting thing?
I guess when I felt like I could handle having, you know, the two children and also working four children, it was just a bit much. And also, I did miss it. I also sculpt, so I was able to, you know, do something artistic while I wasn't working. But I have a daughter who's 13 years old who wants to be an actress, and she actually encouraged me tremendously. She kept saying, "Mom, you have to go back, you have to go back." And that did give me a bit of a shove. So.
Well, was it difficult after 15 years? Were you, as they say, rusty?
You know what? I think I'm better. I think having that break, I'm much more relaxed. I'm much happier. I appreciate it. I'm certainly not as neurotic as I was when I was a child. I think that really just comes to everybody with age. Things are suddenly not so black and white. And, you know, I feel lucky to be able to make a living in the arts. I think when I was young, I wanted to be famous and, you know, do certain things. And now I think I'm just very happy, and I feel fortunate to be able to make a living in the arts.
But let's go back to the neurosis, because I know.
Oh, yeah, you would pick up on, right?
Of course, well, it's the Jewishness. It goes hand in hand.
And with being half-Jewish, you're right.
Now, both of you are actually half-Jewish.
Yes.
So in what ways is this happening for both of you?
Well, we just bonded immediately because of that.
Well, then it would happen, you know.
Well, my dad actually is full Jewish, but he's half Arabic. His father was from Baghdad, and his mother's from Poland.
Wait, who is this? Who is this?
Lorca.
Oh, okay.
So my father, his name is Maurice Paris, and he's actually a music conductor. And his father was from Baghdad, and he played the oud instrument.
Oh, I love the oud!
The oud!
Oh, I love a good oud!
Sing and do all kinds of wonderful things. And my grandmother, Elsie, was from Lodz, Poland.
Oh!
Or Łódź, I think they say Łódź.
Łódź. Well, would you believe it?
Yes, would you believe it or not?
But
my dad is from Bardejov, Czechoslovakia, and he's actually a Holocaust survivor.
Oh. Wow, talk about bringing the conversation right down, huh?
Stop, there's no comedy in that.
Well, there could be. That Italian director found some, but no, normally not. Normally, when you say Holocaust, you say concentration camp. It's like, you can't tell a joke for five more minutes. It's like, let's all just sit here silently and let that moment die. Right, quiet, wait. We'll let a few seconds tick. All right. Good. All right, now let's tell some jokes.
Okay.
No, but he survived the thing.
That's right. There's the good news.
That is the gang, your mom?
And my mom is an actress, Carol Baker.
Of course.
And she lives in Palm Springs now. She's not working anymore. And my dad is an acting teacher, and he lives in Paris, France.
Oh, how wonderful.
But was it difficult having a mother who's a Shiksa? This is what, no.
You know, no. They actually made us go down to the beach very early in the morning and be, you know, confirmed. We had to say prayers and dive under the waves. There were all sorts of awful things that you had to do if, God forbid, your mother was a Shiksa.
This was good. See, in later life, you remember these things and it makes you a better Jew.
Yeah, I also remember one holiday when she cooked pork spare ribs for everybody, so, you know. And then I remember also she was trying to order carrot pudding from the deli once, and she was ordering simmets instead. So.
Oh, actually, simmets is better than carrot pudding, I'll tell you. It just is. Trust me on this. So do you, I don't even want to ask this question, but I kind of have to ask this question of them, also, again for Blanche, is because you are sort of part of that almost Rat Packy kind of a group. Do you ever get together with the Rat Packy kind of 16 candles kind of French postcardy people?
No, you know what? Because I haven't been in the business for 15 years, I really have lost touch with everybody. And, you know, that might have been for the best. It's very good, I think, to go on with your life at a certain point and get out of the Brat Pack.
Were you ever subject or let yourself be part of the bad side of, like, the drugs and the booze and the craziness?
Oh, never!
Never!
About.
Oh, you're a nice half-Jewish girl. I love it. So, no, you're not.
My religion saved me.
Because all the others seem to have gone through all these things and the therapy and the Betty Ford, but you stayed
home. No, I never went that route.
Good for you. Oh, I'm so proud of you. What about you, Lorca?
I'm still recovering. No. In terms of
being a bad kind of a chick.
No, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty boring.
The goyish part of you. No, wait, you're I kid. So, what was, Blanche, your first part after coming out of the your exile, as it were?
My exile. I did the lead in an independent film called Jersey Justice. We still have some pickup shots to do, but hopefully they'll have it ready by the end of the summer. And I get to play a soccer mom who loses her husband and her son in violent acts, and she becomes a vigilante. So once again, it's a comedy, but it does have a little bit of a sad twist there. And it's a first-time director, but he was wonderful, named John Hunt. And there were great cast members with me, and it was a wonderful script.
Good. And Lorca, you've been directing for, in fact, are you the artistic director of the of Multistages, which is putting on Knowing Bliss?
Yes, founder and artistic director, and we're actually celebrating our ninth year.
McMazel? So how did
Thank
you get
you.
Into this? How did you start the company?
I started the company, I actually had to produce a play. Somebody asked me to produce this wonderful play about the Unabomber in 1997.
Talk about dragging the conversation down again!
It's hysterically funny. Actually, I'll tell you a funny story. We actually did it at the John Houseman Theater, and there was a big party going on upstairs for the opening of a new restaurant, and they were playing salsa music, and here we were stuck in Montana, and we had the salsa music bleeding through the ceiling.
I think that was the Josephine Baker restaurant is on that block. That must have been it, yeah.
It's right.
No wonder the young Obama was bombing people. He wanted the music to stop.
Exactly. But so I needed to come up with a name, and I didn't really have a mission yet, and I came up with the name Multistages for the idea of developing plays, because that's what we do. And we take plays through the multi-stages of development. And then from there it branched into doing multidisciplinary theater, which is what we do. And so every play that we do incorporates another artistic discipline. In this play, for example, we have film, we have dance, we have mask work. It's just a fabulous spectacle, if you will.
Oh, see, I have some rabbi friends who are privately into discipline, but it's a very different kind of a thing. It's a little sick.
I can't get into that.
But so 9 years. Marvel, are you going to have a big 10th anniversary kind of a season?
I think so, and I'm very happy to have this as our anniversary production.
Well, let me ask you, then going to Blanche and the age thing, I didn't want to bring it up, but since you did, you're...
I'm very happy to be getting older. Think of the alternative.
getting younger? Oh, no, I know the joke. Yes, I realize. Believe me, I'm on my fifth set of teeth at this point. And I'm only 25, so that should tell you
no
something.
No way.
But you are close to in that 50 range, am I right?
Not there yet. No way. Hold on. Not yet. 40-something.
40-something.
Not 50 yet. Okay.
I don't know. According to the Internet Movie Database here, no offense, but almost, you know, it's not a bad thing. So do you have an issue with this? Even though, you know, you've had the family, you've had the years in the Hollywood, and you're still doing, you know, young, pretty kind of roles, but do you have an issue of turning the big 5-0?
No, you know what, I'm happier than I've ever been. I was, when they tell you you're supposed to be, you know, so happy and wonderful in your 20s, I was very, shall we say, stressed out. No rehabilitation things or drugs or whatever. But I found the younger years to be much more difficult. I'm enjoying myself much more now.
Well, what was so stressful about the younger years? You were a movie star making money.
That'll do it.
Really? Was it just the fact that it was late parties or people wanting a piece of you, or what was the stressful part? No, I'm serious.
You want a piece of you, yes. And you always feel like
and we
you
know what
to
piece,
live up
no.
to expectations.
Right. Okay. So, oh, that's right. You were on, I should mention also that you did have your, I guess perhaps career setbacks. I mean, you were in a production of Lolita. Wait.
That was actually great for me. You know, I got to work with Edward Albee and Donald Sutherland, and even though the play didn't run, for me that was it was a good experience in the end.
Well, what was it like working with two notoriously rather prickly people?
I really enjoyed it. For me, as a young actress, that was a treat. I was working with mainly Edward Albee, who I had been enamored of for many, many years, and I think that was a great privilege.
All right.
He's one of our, you know, underappreciated playwrights.
Oh, see, here I have to disagree. I think he's one of the most overappreciated playwrights
ever.
Absolutely
not.
We love him.
I'm not saying, and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is brilliant, it's fantastic, but some of the other things, you know, you get two acts into a play, it's pretty good, and then he goes completely kablooey in the third act. You don't know what the hell's happening. Tiny Alice, my God, what's going on in that thing?
Well, he pushes the envelope.
People talking to lizards? You can push it back in the closet for all I care. Seal the envelope. Tear it up.
Hi, this is Dave Lefkowitz of Dave's Gone By, reminding you to tune in every Thursday night at 8 and 11 Eastern Time for the best of Dave's Gone By on Live365.com and the special channel DFSX Radio. All you gotta do is go to my website, davesgoneby.org, click on the link, and you can hear a classic episode of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night, 8 and 11. Go to dfsxradio.com for more of me.
Hi, this is Lorca Paris, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
I'm talking on the phone here on the Dave's Gone By radio program with director Lorca Paris, who is the artistic director of Multi Stages, and lead actress Blanche Baker, who is in a play that they are doing called Knowing Bliss. And let me get back to Lorca as far as your techniques as far as doing theater, when you teach or when you direct. Do you follow any particular style or any school of directing, or do you just go by gut, or is there a training involved?
I think there's sort of all of the above. Most of my training was actually by working with directors, and I worked with a lot of directors as an assistant, and of course I studied directing as well. I went to Bennington College, and I studied at Bennington, and I went to the National Theater Institute at the Eugene O'Neill Center.
Oh, I've been there. That's a lovely place. I love
gorgeous.
The trees.
Yes,
oh,
on the water.
The water, yes.
And so I have an actor's background. So I think I approach directing from the point of view of working with actors. And I love working with designers. I also have a background in art. And so for me, when I look at, I guess when I look at theater, because I do primarily theater, when I look at theater, I see it sort of as a painting and kind of, what palette do you want to use on that particular painting? And so it is sort of a wonderful collaborative and artistic expression.
So in the years that you have been running this theater company, what have you learned that you weren't learning as, shall we say, a hired gun? What have you learned by being sort of the chief cook and bottle washer and founder and artistic director that you got from doing it in this way that you didn't get from doing jobs at different theater companies and things like that?
Well, I actually like being in charge.
Okay.
I'm the eldest of three kids, so I think you're sort of, you fit into that rather quickly. But I'm a strong leader, and I think that I work well with people, and I'd say that the most important thing that I've learned over the 9 years of actually doing this is some patience and understanding that perfection is sometimes fleeting. You know, we always reach for perfection, and then you kind of wonder what exactly is perfection. And my feeling, I think, that I've come away with is perfection is the final result of everybody coming together. So it's a very collaborative process, actually.
This is true. This is true. It's kind of like running a shul.
Right.
I'm up there on the
beam. I'm the rabbi at multi-stages.
And let me also get back to the actress Blanche Baker, who is starring in that play, Knowing Bliss, and also some of the other people that you worked with in the theater. You worked with some pretty heavy-hitter theory people in the directing world. You worked with, first of all, Robert Brustein, or is it Brustein? Stein. Tomato, tomato. What was that like? Because I know he's a brilliant theorist and writer.
Once again, I was very fortunate. As a young actress, I was quite spoiled. The first plays that I did were directed by Robert Brustein and Andre Vaida. And I had no idea that there was something other than, you know, these brilliant men telling you exactly what your character wanted, what the play was about. He made, you know, I did The Wild Duck with Brustein. He made it seem like it was easy to do things like that. And Andre Vaida, I learned a huge amount from him, even about film acting. You know, he gave me lessons on how I would do something for film as opposed to play. And he was very imaginative and really encouraged that side in me. So I was just fortunate to right away start with people of that caliber.
Well, actually, I'm hoping for a little bit of a specificity here. What are literal things that either of them taught you about acting, either on film or in the theater?
I guess it's a certain bravery, and that as long as you have a basic truth about your character, you can go very far. And, like, at one point I remember Andre Vaida was smoking a cigar, and I was doing a scene on top of my bed. I was playing this young girl, and he took the cigar out of his mouth and gave it to me and said, "Why don't you smoke the cigar?" And so I realized that, you know, I wasn't scared then after that you could try so many different things. And once you have your basic character down and you know who you are, you can go as far as to smoke a cigar.
I just
have to say that in Knowing Bliss, she actually climbs a ladder and poses with no arms holding on to anything. So Blanche is actually very fearless.
And it sounds like the actress is too, especially where Sigmund Freud is concerned. But
oh, yes, sometimes a cigar is not just a cigar.
But I don't want to bring the conversation down, and I know I did this last time when we mentioned the Holocaust, but actually, the Holocaust is kind of was a good thing for you, in a very sick way of saying, Blanche. I had forgotten completely. You're an Emmy winner.
Right, for that. Well, that had special meaning. I actually traced my father's route through the concentration camps before I did the film, and he was 14 when he was liberated from Bergen-Belsen. And I was playing a young girl in the film. So obviously after I'd done this research and then with the personal history, it was a very special, you know, role for me to play. And I think I did a good job. And obviously I had to do a good job for more than just one simple reason. So I was glad that it turned out well and that the work was appreciated. And it was one of the first miniseries. And, you know, at that time, many, many years ago, though I'm so, so young, it really brought the Holocaust to many people's attention, and it was shown in many schools and across the country at the time, and it was, you know, a leader in that genre.
I cannot help but ask, and I know it brings the conversation down, but your memories of things that your father told you that happened to him. Do you have any particular anecdotes or horror stories of his experiences?
Well, this is a cheery interview.
I know.
Well, I tell you, it's more things like, you know, I was scared. I would have nightmares and things. But I remember when I was going to register for a new school. We had just moved to Hollywood because my mother's career had taken off. And we were sitting there, and they had the old-fashioned typewriters. And there was a room of women at typewriters. And we were giving my information to this one woman. And I turned to my father to ask him something, and he was frozen. And I was like, Daddy, what's wrong? What's wrong? And the sound of the typewriters reminded him of the sound of the cattle car wheel.
Oh, God.
I think it has defined his entire life.
In what ways?
I think his work, his relationship to the world, I don't think you get over something like that. And a lot of people bury it and don't talk about it. He actually, you know, has spoken about it, has appeared in some of the documentaries. He's registered at the, you know, Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. But I think that's who he is. I think it took him a long time to get over his anger. I've noticed that dissipate over the years. Like, he couldn't bear to get into a Mercedes and things for a while because it was German. And he's moved past that, the anger.
I haven't.
But I don't think you ever move past the experience of losing your entire family.
Were there cousins? And, I mean, do you know?
Out of 103 members of my family, 2 survived the war.
Gewalt.
Right, we had 4 who survived on my side.
It's not a contest.
As a matter of fact, every Passover, my father reads the names of all of our relatives that we know of who died in Poland. And one of the people who comes to our Passover is my cousin Helena, who was a child survivor. She did not actually go into the concentration camp, but she escaped the Warsaw ghetto at the age of 9, climbing over the wall, and was living with families, wound up getting a fake birth certificate saying she was Catholic, and she's a very wonderful and strong woman, and she just started talking about it just recently, and she's in her early 70s now. So it affects us all, you know. Anybody, I think, who has any connection to European Jewry, it changes your life. Of course, more so for the people who have, who went through the experience, but it affects the family of those people and the family of that next generation, et cetera, et cetera.
It does indeed. I can't even, there's no joke. There's nothing I can even say. It's just, it's out there. Even 60, 70 years later, it's still out there.
I'm actually going to segue for a second over to Knowing Bliss, because actually it was interesting working on this particular production, because we are dealing with the Anasazi tribe of Indians who disappeared. And the journey in the play that Bliss takes is that she's an anthropologist. By the way, the character's name is Candace, the actress is Candace Wall Myers, and she's wonderful. And she takes this trip out to the Anasazi cliff dwellings. There were over 1 million Anasazi people living in this country, and they've disappeared. We haven't seen any Anasazi people in the past 1,000 years, and they don't really know what happened to them. And it's quite fascinating. And so we look at, you know, as a Jewish person or as an African-American person or whatever it may be, any kind of minority that has been oppressed, we look around and we see so many other people in such similar situations. It has a universal appeal, I guess.
This is true. And please also, again, remind people it's playing at, well, Multistages is doing it, but it's playing at La Tea.
Teatro La Tea. Teatro is in Spanish, T-E-A-T-R-O, La, L-A-T-E-A, La Tea. And it's at 107 Suffolk Street on the 2nd floor on the corner of Rivington. And you can get tickets by calling 212-868-4444. And it's only $18. So
Smart Ticks online with 2 T's.
Right. Or you can, online at www.smarttix, smarttix.com.
And it's running through May 13th. And as you said, it's high. It's $18, the perfect price.
Yes, hi. As a matter of fact, somebody sent us a exactly $18 as a donation for good luck.
Now, also as far as the future things that you guys are doing, I mean, Lorca, you're planning the next season. This is sort of a keystone thing. You're going to have a gala and everything.
Exactly.
Have you picked some of the other plays that are going to be in upcoming?
Well, actually, we're holding our next contest. We've already started receiving all kinds of wonderful submissions that are being sent to us from around the world. So we're starting to put that together. I'm actually going to be directing a couple of other plays coming up that are not multi-stages. But many new wonderful things are in the works.
And Blanche, you said you have
a film called Science Fair. A young director, Dean Fleischer-Camp, who won the Alfred P. Sloan Science Award. And I'm going to play the mother in it, and I'm looking forward to it. We're going to shoot it in June.
Actually, I went to Dean Fleischer Day Camp. It was not pleasant. It was the middle of New Jersey. I was covered with mosquitoes. It was horrible. But I'm sure the film's going to be lovely. And you both sound like wonderful, lovely, and half Jewish people. It's terrific to talk to you. Any further thoughts about making a life in a creative field? Because so many people want to get into movies and theater and radio and television. Any thoughts and
don't
advice?
Don't do it unless you absolutely have to. You have to love it. You do have to love it. Because the business side of show business is tough. But the rewards, I think, are beyond anything. And every production we do, every time we're involved, we work with new people and all kinds of... It's a wonderful educational experience, and it's artistically uplifting. So go for it.
And if you love your work, I think that's a great blessing.
Well, I hope that we will love the work of these two wonderful women in Knowing Bliss at Teatro Latea. We've been talking to Lorca Perez as the director, and we've been talking to Blanche Baker, the actress. Thank you so much. It's been a joy. It's been terrific. I wish you both best of luck and nachas and everything.
Thank you very
much. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
What's playing on Broadway? I'll tell you what's playing on Broadway, and I'll do it by checking Performing Arts Insider. Off Broadway, off, off Broadway, off, off, off Broadway. You keep adding offs, they'll keep adding listings. Who's in the cast? What's it about? Why is it special? Performing Arts Insider is Broadway the best way. 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Or see PerformingArtsInsider.com. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off.
Yes, and this is the segment where I do go off on a thought or an idea or a topic or a rant, sometimes kind of angrily or with a big old chip on my shoulder, but other times just to kind of let you know what's been happening and what's been on my mind, and going to talk about my American jury duty service that I proudly played. Well, I wasn't that proud. You just kind of have to do it or you get thrown in jail. And I did mine last week, and I have to say, overall, it was a quick, relatively painless, and positive experience. You're not going to hear me rant and say terrible things or what a waste or anything like that. I've got to say, in some ways, obviously, I was lucky, but also... not bad. I mean, I think they are getting better for the most part at what they do. Although, as I said before, when I opened the show, I was kind of angry because I got two summonses nearly at once. One for Nassau County jury duty, regular court, and then supposed to show up 2 weeks later in federal court out in Islip. And, you know, they corrected their mistake after I proved that I had done my Nassau County service already. But, I mean, I wonder how many tax dollars and how many people's mistakes this goes through and how much paperwork just for something that, you know, we shouldn't be in two different lotteries considering that I don't live in Suffolk County at all, which should disqualify me to begin with. But that's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the actual experience of doing jury duty in Long Island. And the first thing is you get to the big old courthouse on 100 Supreme Court Drive, I think it is, in Mineola. It's this big, beautiful, imposing building. And going through the metal detector, no big deal, empty the pockets. And so the guard at the metal detector asks, "Do you have a camera?" And I'm like, no, I don't. And he says, "You're sure you don't have a camera?" And it's like, what is this, 20 minutes? I said, "No, I don't." He said, "Well, you have four rolls of film." And, you know, already at that moment I'm thinking, all right, do I really want to go through this explanation thing? And first thing out of the top of my head is, well, we just recently got back from a vacation, and I guess I didn't take all the film out. Because I didn't want to have to stand there and explain that those little black plastic canisters that you keep film rolls in, they're very handy for other things. So I'll use one for spare film, obviously, or one for old film once you've used up the roll, but also I'll keep spare change in one of them, and then there's another that I keep Advil and aspirin and Vioxx in, just in case I'm somewhere and need to pop a pill, and I don't want to carry bunches of pills, which I think would be a hell of a lot more suspicious going through any kind of airport or jury room than film would. And the other part of that is, here's a courtroom, okay, and what's going on in there is that they're trying all these cases of everything from little traffic accidents and stuff like that in civil trials to murders and crazy people and people who attack people with hatchets and knives. And I'm figuring there's also people who probably have trials go on for weeks and weeks and weeks, and they're criminals who know every corner, or certainly their lawyers do too, of that building. And yet they're worried about a juror bringing in a camera, as if taking a few pictures is going to lead to more terrorism than some actual real criminal who's there day after day walking around the whole place. So, anyway, get into the jury room and sit down, and then they start the movie. It's a bit of a plug for CBS, which I was a little shocked at. Suddenly, there's Diane Sawyer and Ed Bradley making the pitch for America and the importance of jury duty service. And when Bradley, I think, says, "I'm Ed Bradley from 60 Minutes," I'm like, wait a minute, are we going to start seeing product placements in jury duty movies? Suddenly, in 5 years, will we see the guy from NCIS or CSI popping Cheetos while he's telling us about how it's terribly important that all Americans do their jury duty, you know? The film was kind of cool, although a little creepy, especially at 8:30 in the morning. You start watching this piece, and they're explaining how in the old days, like Puritan times, the ways for trying criminals were really kind of nuts. I mean, they would take the accused person, bind him, throw him in the river, and if he sank and drowned, he was guilty. And if he rose and up and lived and didn't drown, then he was innocent. Or maybe it was even weirder. If he sank, he was innocent, but if he rose up, he was guilty, and then they killed him, which is even more fun. And then they also used to, like, take people's hands and plunge them into a vat of boiling water. And if the hand healed in less than 3 days, then that person was innocent. But if the hand festered and you know, got infected and stuff, well, then that person was guilty. And this was their method of justice back then. So they did make kind of the point that as flawed as our system is and as a pain in the ass as it is, it's a little better than what we used to have, and at least we have a jury of peers. But they really are bending over backwards to make the experience a little lighter-hearted. I mean, we had a judge come out to talk to us first. I mean, this was before any cases. And he comes out there and he starts telling jokes. He's doing a whole, like, comedy routine up there. And I'm like, whoa. And he was pretty funny. But nobody's laughing because it's Monday morning at 9:05, and everybody's either asleep or really pissed off because it's jury duty. So I felt for him because it wasn't bad. And besides, after about 9:15, once you fill out all the forms and stuff, it's all about waiting and waiting. And they also deal with the people with legitimate excuses. You know, they say everybody who has a legitimate excuse to be excused and pardoned from jury duty, please come up to the front now. And that includes caregivers, people with real medical excuses, and also mothers raising their children and working more than 20 hours per week should be excused. And this I do not understand completely, because on one level, I'm assuming the logic is if they can work 20 hours a week and raise the kid, then they can take those work hours and instead, like everybody else, go and do the jury duty for them that amount of time, and they're being paid $40 a day for their time anyway, and their company, I believe, has to be responsible for that money. But let's say you're a woman raising more than one kid, or you have a part-time job that isn't 20 hours a week, but it doesn't pay very well, and your pay's a little better, I guess, than jury duty, or you just need to be watching two or three kids, and then you end up at jury duty paying $40 a day trying to find a safe babysitter or a nursery or place to leave the kids, daycare, all day that's more than $40, and you're really kind of screwed there. So I think it penalizes single moms a bit. But okay, so you're waiting and waiting, and gets to lunchtime. I'm not called, 12:30, and the lovely thing was that it had rained in the morning, but by lunchtime, it was this gorgeous sunny day, so I start walking. I'm not going to, you know, go looking for a burger in the cafeteria. I'm going to see what's around there in Mineola. And even the area has gotten a little more interesting than it was about 5 years ago. So much as I despise Starbucks, there is one a block from the courthouse for people who need it. But I go walking a little further afield and came across a little Brazilian restaurant right along, I think it's Old Country Road, within walking distance. And got myself a little grilled steak and some guarana soda, which is this fruity sort of ginger-ale-y Brazilian soda. And I hate to say it, but there is always that little bit of selfishness and schadenfreude with me, because you know, I'm sitting there in that Brazilian restaurant, and half the fun of it, aside from the fact that the food was pretty good and reasonably priced, was the fact that you know, I felt these fools were sitting in the cafeteria, you know, doling out crappy little macaroni and cheese or grabbing these fish sticks. If they only knew that just a few blocks away, I was wise enough to take a little stroll and get some real food. I know, that's evil. But, you know, then again, we are all in the same boat, so I go back, get there just in time for 2 o'clock, and there's more waiting and waiting. And I think for people who have cases or are waiting for all that, there's this other section where they can go, and there's computers hooked up to the internet. Not that everybody has options to one, but there's about 5 or 6 of them that people can use. There's televisions broadcasting some news. I mean, they give you stuff even if you don't have a book. But a little bit more waiting, and then, wouldn't you know it, 2:45, I get called, and go into this room, and they start doing the voir dire, the questioning over this case that has to do with a fender bender, which is exactly the kind of case I had when I was called and chosen 4 years earlier. So I was figuring, with all that back in my head, here was a case that should have been over within a day. Someone hit someone else on the road, and it was all about the insurance companies, and that took about 2 weeks of time. So it's late in the day, and they're calling people and selecting some people and not others. And finally, yes, they get to my name for a second alternate juror. So they've gotten so far, and there's almost nobody left in the room, and then finally, my name comes up. And I've had to listen to these lawyers ask the same questions again and again of these rows of people, because you get, like, a line of 6 chairs, and 6 people sit down at a time as they start picking and choosing. And then they go for another 6 or 4 or however many slots are left. And finally, there's one slot left for an alternate, and that's me. And I must have been in, even though I had a pretty good day, I must have been in a mood, because I'm already answering their questions before they even ask it. I'm like, yes, yes, I have been on jury duty before. Yes, I was satisfied with the resolution, but no, I was, you know, I'm just throwing things at them on one level to hope that something I say will get me out of it, because I don't want to serve again on a stupid case. And at the same time, also being completely honest and being out there and answering the questions, I guess, that they want to know, including one where the case involved the quote-unquote victim didn't speak English. And so they were worried that there might be something held against her if she had to go through a translator or if she didn't deserve money from the court case. She was absolutely a citizen, a legal citizen of America, but not an English speaker. So both lawyers were making sure she wouldn't be penalized for or against. So I'm telling them that, but I also said, hey, look, there's a guy that you guys already selected for this jury, and he was answering questions. I was listening to him. You were asking him some of the questions you were asking me, and I couldn't make out a word he was saying. How could you? You'd ask him something like, so how long have you been in this country? And he'd be like, I've been country years. And yes, yes, but how many years? Yes, years in country. And this would go on with all sorts of other things, like, have you ever been sued by anybody? And he'd say, I be the suit. Law? What? Have you ever had a lawsuit, a judgment held against you? And they'd be like, lawsuit not good. And this would go on, and yet they picked him, I assumed, for the jury. And I'm telling them when it gets my turn, I'm like, look, I can deal with the defendant, or excuse me, the plaintiff, if she doesn't speak English. But how am I supposed to argue with a juror who can't speak a word of the language? And the two lawyers turned to each other and laughed, and they said, we didn't pick him. Yeah, we sent him back, or we sent him home. He's not on the jury. And I felt like a real idiot for not being able to follow what was going on. Everybody was kind of laughing at that point, but I had assumed they picked him. So this goes on, and I also throw in a little bit about how, you know, I have no great love for insurance companies, which is true. And so I finally get off the chair, and they send me out of the room. I'm thinking, okay, I start on Thursday. They promised it was going to be a 2-day thing, which means it'll probably be a 5-day thing. walk out of the room, get to the desk, and they say, okay, you're excused. And I give them this shocked look because I had assumed that was it. I'm going to be serving. And instead, for some reason, they, whatever I must have said up there, I guess they noticed I was a little different, and let me go. And I said, thank you very much. 10 minutes later, got my card and then said, you're good for 6 years on this and 2 years on federal. Go home. Thank you very much for your service. And on one level, the shock was, and I was thrilled, and yet, I have to say, I wasn't really trying to get out of it, and there is that moment when I think, when I thought, hey, wait a minute, I would have been a damn good juror, I'm as smart as anybody there, yet they didn't want me. Well, what's wrong with me? You know, I told you I was padded cell material. Anyway, I have a couple more minutes of Dave's Gone By service before we're all excused for the evening, so come on back for the end of the show right after this.
Do you know how easy and inexpensive it is to advertise on Dave's Gone By? You don't? Well, hey, it's even easier to find out. You can run a 30 or 60 second ad or sponsor a show segment or the whole show. Just go to davesgoneby.org to see the rates or call 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Bring your message to my audience. Advertise on Dave's Gone By. Sir, what are you doing?
Nothing.
Are you photocopying your butt?
Yeah, isn't it cool? I want to send lots of copies.
Not in a public library.
I know, it's so expensive here. 25 cents a cheek.
No, I mean, why not go to Hewlett Minuteman Press?
Hewlett Minuteman Press?
1315 Broadway in Hewlett. They make copies, they can laminate it, print it in a booklet, put it on a mug.
My ass on a mug? Wow!
Call 516-569-5577. 516... Hey! Stop it! You can't copy that!
But what do I put on the other side of the mug?
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this final day of April. Thank you so much to Lorca Perez and Blanche Baker of Knowing Bliss. Thank you to Rabbi Saul Solomon for his wit and wisdom and weirdness. Thank you to my wonderful wife, Joyce, and to the sponsors of this show. Thank you so much for listening and reminding you that I will be back next Sunday, 11 o'clock, with the 171st episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Court is adjourned and gone by.
Oh, help me in my weakness. I heard the drift of sea. As they carry him from the courtroom and were taking him away.